Hey guys, this podcast is being brought to you with the help of Blue Mic Microphones and Skullcandy Headphones. Check them out at bluemic.com and skullcandy.com. All right, the official Danko Jones podcast begins Welcome to another edition of the Danko Jones, the official Danko Jones podcast. This is episode number 9, but with Nick Flanagan here in tow, this is installment number 2. We brought Nick in. Well, I brought him in last week, and we did our first podcast together 7 days ago today. An hour from now, it will be 7 days ago to the hour. What did you think of our first podcast together, Nick Flanagan?
Well, hi. First of all, hello. Hey.
Oh, hey. Is that going to be your signature thing now?
Hey. Kind of a Fonzie thing. Well, I haven't really brought it up to anyone yet, but I really enjoyed the podcast, and I thought it moved along nicely, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed talking about myself. I liked the part where I was talking about me, but I also liked the part where it was then related to the Danko Jones lifestyle. I thought the prank call revelation was an interesting fact about yourself.
We didn't really get too into it. What are you looking at?
Was it not in the podcast? Did I listen to the wrong one?
No. You're giving me this look like, oh shit, I fucked up. No, I didn't edit that part out. I edited all the other parts that no one heard of you going off about. Yeah, in the Toronto comedy scene. Let me tell you.
You guys have no idea how great the Toronto comedy scene is. I just
that was all edited out for.
Played a great show last night.
Great. Oh yeah, you did play. But yeah. Getting back to last week's show, I thought it was good. I thought that there was a lot of uhs.
Mm-hmm. Likes. The likes are the ones that actually drive me the most crazy, because I know that that doesn't mean anything, and I know it's from Valley Girl talk. I'm not from California.
I'm so critical of people who use it, and then I'm fucking doing it myself.
I thought you said but you said I'm.
Did I say like a lot? Did you notice that I
said? I said like a lot. I didn't notice you saying like a lot.
God, I've been just trying to phase that fucking word out of my speak.
So if anyone has any suggestions about how to maybe lose these involuntary things. these ways we talk.
I hate it when people use the word like.
Everything sucks when people talk most of the time.
And also what I noticed you did mm-hmm. a little bit is everything was a question.
Well, that's just how I talk.
That's just how I talk. So.
Well, I noticed with you.
Everything is up at the end of every sentence, even though it's not a question. So it's like. There was a subway delay.
There was.
Getting over here. Do you want to go to Starbucks? Oh, that is a question.
Yeah, that's a question. So you can do that, I guess. You could also just say.
Can I have a grande latte?
Do you want to go to Starbucks?
That's a question.
But I didn't phrase it like a question.
Then it would be the opposite of going up.
I don't want to emphasize. That's equally annoying. I'm going to start doing my questions as a sentence, like as a period at the end of it.
Okay.
I'm going to start doing my question, my send.
You know what else I say? I just said it. I said, okay.
That's your cross to bear.
I got to figure that shit out.
Yeah, you got to figure it out. Okay. Do you say it on stage? Do you ever drop an M-K on the audience?
Nah.
M-K, babes, rockers.
Nah, I'm in a different mindset, man.
But you do use the phrase babes and rockers when addressing your crowds, right? To distinguish between rockers and babes.
I identify myself as a rocker, so yes, I
identify myself as a babe.
Yeah, I know that about you. That's why I opened the door when we walked into Starbucks to get these coffees we're sipping on right now. Not that they're sponsoring the podcast or anything, but if they were, that'd be friggin' amazing.
Yeah, unless they hooked us up with Via. the instant coffee.
But that was something that JC pointed out when he heard the podcast. The first, he had one criticism about it. He thought it was good, but the criticism he had was too many plugs. I was plugging away too much.
Well, I was going to say, actually, that was one of my realizations, too. I actually enjoy a plug. I think I have a sick enjoyment of people plugging things mm-hmm. on their own shows. Mm-hmm. And
too much, he said.
Well, I just think you should have had more fun with it. It honestly sounded like you had a gun to your head for the first three quarters of the plug.
I was just, listen, this is my whole thing about our sponsors, and I don't mean to plug even further, but I just think it's really cool. It makes our little podcast we're doing that much more official, having these sponsors, and yet these are sponsors of... Like, the people who are sponsoring us, the companies, are things that I use. I use these legitimately. These are brands that I definitely use. Like, there's some podcasts out there, if anyone was to get into the podcast world, where they're plugging, like, you know, sex toys.
Then hopefully the host is.
Maybe they're using it, but I don't think they are.
Yeah.
Because those guys are getting laid out of their balls because they're celebrities.
Celebrities have the most sex.
Yeah, so...
There was a survey recently.
But, you know, I mean, the Skullcandy headphones I use every day, the Yeti mics and the Snowball mic, the blue microphones, the blue mics we're using right now, as we are the Skullcandy headphones, so...
God, I'm enjoying this is a plug them also, too. By the way.
Yeah, I don't mean to.
I like that you've now folded this into being a plug.
Well, I'm just addressing JC's criticism that it was too pluggy. So I will let's change the subject.
I like a room that's got plugs all around.
Let's just change the subject. I just like the fact that the podcast feels official, that we've got sponsors. It's kind of like when doing our band. I remember this one time we were on tour in 2003, and I was still using two guitars that I bought with my own, scraped together with my own money, and we're on this tour of Europe, and we're headlining all these kinds of, you know, bigger venues, and the opening band, this is 03, the opening band had all these sponsors. Like, they were all endorsed guitar pedals, guitars, amps, even like various clothes that they were wearing. They were all sponsored, and we were on off days trying to find a music store so I can get guitar strings, and, you know, asking if I had enough picks to see the next week of shows. And I was just going, something's not right here. And when I finally got an endorsement or a sponsorship or whatever you call them with Gibson guitars, man, I felt so legit, because I grew up reading those guitar magazines and seeing like Kirk Hammett sponsored by Mesa Boogie.
Exclusively uses. Sabian.
You know, Ibanez guitar sponsored those crazy Roland. Steve Vai guitars. And James Hetfield used ESP guitars and yada, yada, yada. And once I had my Gibson endorsement, I really felt like I was in a legit band. You know, as punk rock as it is to, you know, wheel around your own guitar and buy your own strings and blah, blah, blah. Man, it feels great when you get some sort of endorsement or just an acknowledgement that you're doing something that's worth backing.
Well, that happened maybe in punk rock to an extent in the 2000s, because there was so much sponsorship of a bit of a different sort going around. Mm-hmm. You know,
like what?
Scion was sponsoring stuff. Mm-hmm. Red Bull, Colt Vans. 45. Vans.
That's a big one.
Converse. My point is, people weren't necessarily getting gear sponsorships, but they were certainly getting free shoes and swag and raiding Fred Perry stores, you know, after hours. And I dropped that. Is You Know also a bad one?
Oh, is this addressing what we were talking about just a few minutes
ago? Yeah, I thought I'd backtrack.
You Know.
I mean,
the way I was brought up on punk rock was full-on grassroots, middle finger up in the air to the man.
Right.
And
barf on their laps.
Huh?
Barf on the man's lap. Just puke on the man.
Okay. I didn't know where you were going there, but okay. Yeah. But, I mean, it's just like a big middle finger to everybody. And it's something, and yet I also grew up in the metal the metal scene where I did an I grew up in the metal scene where there's endorsements and all kinds of stuff. You know, there wasn't as much about making
it. It's metal all about was making ultimately
right
about making it. I think
about making it. So I had these two worlds colliding, as with a lot of people, but there only a few people actually take that. Be in a band and have that collide in their band and grapple with, okay, what should we do? What, you know, I mean, I want to have allegiance to my punk rock roots and have Ian MacKay proud of me, mm-hmm. you know, but at the same time, you know, it would be cool to be like Kirk Hammett and have a guitar sponsorship, that kind of thing.
Well, I think that the big thing that happens is as soon as you get a taste of it, you just go, oh, okay, this is much easier.
Yeah. Oh, God,
this is way easier.
Fuck, I remember the first tours we did when we would, you know, at the end of the set on stage go, does anybody have a place to stay?
Yeah.
And now it's like separate hotel rooms. Thank you very much.
Well, yeah.
I don't need to smell your crap.
Yeah, I don't want to hear
after you
leave
the washroom.
I mean, in a best case scenario, you're in three separate huge tour buses alone on each bus.
You know,
robots driving the bus.
Oh, we've been on tours where I see that and I look at it with this longing in my eyes.
You're like, I want to burn this extra fuel so badly.
But I used to do that when I'd see like bands have separate hotel rooms or something.
Or even, yeah, but
it just,
two hotel rooms between five guys.
You're exactly. Like,
whoa, that's
wow, you
great.
Got two. Yeah. I remember just getting one, hiding in the van, so the night clerk doesn't see you. You've probably done
that. Yeah, you have the one, the person with the credit card goes in, gets the room.
Hide under the back seat.
Go by the ice machine.
Yeah.
Go, boy, there's an ice machine at the back.
Okay, we'll let you
open
in.
The back door.
Yeah.
Whoa, it's, God. It's so sad. It's not, it's such an
It's something
hard
no one talks about. No one talks about that. I never hear that kind of stuff. I always hear, like, when people get in the van stories, it's always about, yeah, this guy was bugging the shit out of me at the show and I punched, well, I'm doing a whole Rollins thing, but, you know, it's all about punching the guy in the face who's bugging you or at the backstage or during the show or stage dives on your crotch. But no one talks about the moments when you have to hide in the back of the van because the night clerk is, you know, might see you and charge you for two rooms. And you don't have enough money, and you're just thinking, all my friends at home are sleeping in their beds. They're making like five times more money than I'm making.
They have internet.
They've got, well, back when we were doing it, there wasn't even home internet.
Okay, they have.
They had.
They
cable.
Might have a large. What, they have what? Cable?
They have cable. They had color TVs. God dang it.
Well, the punk rock one. Is again, it's because we only did those kinds of tours basically. If we got a hotel room, it was once or twice on a tour generally.
Right. Yeah,
touring Europe.
God, I don't mean to sound like a fucking rock douche.
No, it's fine. I think it has more to do with the bulk of our band being in our 20s and not really caring for that period of touring more than necessarily. We probably would. I all get hotel rooms now because everyone's older.
And dude, like, you know, we've been touring for fucking 15 years.
Right, exactly.
I mean,
this is the first couple
gonna,
of years.
If anyone's gonna fucking point their finger and charge me with being a dick, you do it for 15 years with all your buddies in one fucking room.
I mean, people are still band. There are bands still doing it, and there's something to be said about in punk rock. There's a network somewhat set up of people who are helping put each other up and making food, whatever, especially in Europe.
And I mean, respect that. I have all full respect
for
that.
I mean, in Europe, there's actually a really amazing kind of crossover sometimes where squats might have a venue large enough that, you know, a band that commands 500 people could actually play, a weird punk venue there. And they always make sure you have food, and they always make sure you sleep. So Europe is—it's really regimented, you know.
They're so used to it; it's so great.
But in America, it's a lot more anything goes. The punk rock thing, it's like
it's weird. It's weird. I would think that it would be even more advanced in Europe because you know bands like the Minutemen and Black Flag, they started this thing, as far as I know. I mean,
yeah,
but
they stopped. I mean, they stopped being the Minutemen and Black Flag. Like, Greg Ginn retreated to a home and you know, and
but then
and
raised the next cash, generation then, took over. The next generation
there was
took
no
over.
There was no. I mean, the next generation were people who were just focusing on finding show spaces of their own. I think that was the next thing. And then
God, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
It's kind of the 90s is such a weird mishmash of stuff in terms of the where punk rock went. But my point was,
what's
in the
point?
States, you know, you'll go play a punk show or a mm-hmm. garage punk show, whatever, DIY right. kind of show, and they'll put you up. But the price you pay in the States for everybody's partying, so you're gonna have to party. You might have to sleep on a pinball machine or something, in a best case scenario, a pinball machine. In a worst case scenario, in a cat litter. You know, we
in a what?
Like a litter box?
For oh, cat litter. Okay.
A cat litter kind of makes it sound like a bunch of kittens. In a best case scenario, you're sleeping on a soft pile of kittens, a kitten
okay.
cushion.
Right.
And it's great. But I remember we stayed at a house. I basically wanted to get to this one story about a possible nightmare that can happen. We played in North Carolina, and there were a bunch of at a punk rock house, and it was with this awesome band, Double Negative, who were really great. And we wound up crashing at the house. Nobody came to the show. Double Negative left. It was a punk house that was all like 20-year-olds. They partied in the room where people could have stayed.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. we had to sort of improvise places to stay in this house.
Someone, is this the beginning of the tour or the end of the tour?
Middle.
All right.
Our bassist took a room that had recently been abandoned by a kid who lived there who then had, quote, moved to Portland, unquote. Not the first, not the last.
You know, if the story stops there, it's already a nightmare for me.
Well, he had left a lot of his stuff, including a CD by known racist band Berserker. So there was just this Berserker CD and a cot.
That's awesome.
In this room. And our drummer was just trying to party with these people, but they were being weird with him. And I slept next, in the middle of the hallway around all the bedrooms, the guitarist John and I both slept next to each other. He snores. I couldn't sleep.
It's the worst.
There was a lizard in like a terrarium, a mini terrarium, about 2 feet away from us. And then I hear this like pitter-patter and feel a pitter-patter of feet on my face, and it was a dog is going on me, and this couple, this crusty punk couple goes with their dog into one of the rooms, and then this other couple goes into another one of the rooms. They both of these couples wind up starting to have loud sex. And my friend is snoring next to me. And the only thing I could think to do at that point was to relieve myself sexually.
Are you serious?
I'm totally serious.
And you're saying it's the middle of the tour?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I was so upset by the situation. And the couple, the most troubling thing, you have to understand, I was not including this punk couple who were having sex with their dog in the room in my relieving of myself. The other couple, the lady, I managed to kind of go, I can make this. I can work with this other scenario. Honestly, if you're gonna have sex that close to me, it's rude.
I agree. It's
and then, plus my buddy. And then when I told them that I did tell the band, and I honestly think it was part of the rift that led to our band eventually breaking up.
Are you serious?
I'm not 100% serious, but you know. How would you feel if
You're kind of outing yourself before your band members start talking shit about you?
Yeah, Nick's a chronic masturbator. Yeah, yeah. No, I'm a crying masturbator, not a chronic masturbator.
But only in dire situations.
That was an That was like you crack open the emergency fire hydrant.
Well, you know, you really find out a lot about the people that you are in a band with when you go out on tour.
Yeah.
And it really can make or break, you know, whether you guys keep it going. And there's so many bands that are so great, mm-hmm. you know, and they break up and you go, why did they break up? They've got such a great thing going. You can't find this magic, you know, by snapping your fingers and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah.
Like Firehouse.
Firehouse? What, the 1990s glam band Firehouse?
Yeah, I was sad.
Or do you mean like Mike Watt's Firehose?
No, I meant Firehouse.
Oh, okay.
I don't know the other band you're talking about.
You don't know Mike Watt's Firehose?
I mean, I took out one of their cassettes from the library, but I don't know them personally.
And you know Firehouse?
I met them a couple times at signings.
But what I'm getting at is, you know, you don't know what happens in those moments on tour that can really, like, break up a band. Because the band is, they miss their girlfriends, and they miss their dog, and they miss their toilet and their bed. They don't give a shit. They're at their wit's end. Anything can break them up at that point. And you really have to be made of sturdy stuff.
You're a three-piece. I think that helps to be a smaller group of people, you know?
In a way, but it's also, you know, you're more in each other's faces.
Sure.
Sometimes you can kind of go, oh, I don't like that guy so much. I have four other people to talk to, or three other people to talk to.
I wish I had someone to conspire with against this person.
Well,
that's what happens in bands,
that
right?
That does happen,
man. You
got
five people in a band.
Fuck you have, yeah.
Two guys are talking, uh-huh. The rhythm section.
Yep.
They're like, hey, I don't know. I don't like that this guy's doing this. Yeah. And then the guitarist, and basically the guitarist and the singer are going to be two. If they're two separate entities, there's going to be some. That's going to be a big dynamic.
I notice the dynamic between guitarists and singers, but more so singers and drummers. Not to say that I'm reflecting our band in this, but I've seen it in other bands.
Because I've had a lot of drummers.
See, that's what I mean. I don't mean to throw light on our band,
yeah.
But I've seen it played out in other bands as well. Like the drummer and the singer want the spotlight. The drummer is kind of like the weird instrument of the band. And so obviously anyone who goes behind the kit wants that attention. The singer who has the spotlight on them definitely wants the attention. So there's this weird balance, weird, you know, back and forth between drummers and singers. And that's why, you know, I see people like Nicky Anderson from the Helicopters, and who is a drummer in Entombed, mm-hmm. and the singer in Helicopters, Dave Grohl, is an obvious one.
Yeah.
And then there's Gil Moore from Triumph.
He was a drummer.
He's also a singing drummer.
And Canadian. I actually do have a void about bands, 80s and 70s, late 70s rock like that. I basically mm-hmm. had to backtrack because
just
the 90s stuff. Well, that was when I grew up, was the 90s. So, you know, 1990, 91 was when I was really noticing music. So it was just the tail end of those bands, really.
I love a lot of 70s bands, a lot of rock. My true love is like rock music. Rock. Not metal, not punk, rock.
Hard rock? Slightly hard rock?
Yeah, hard rock. Like Kiss is my true love.
Right.
And then, you know, I also have a love for heavy metal because mm-hmm. I can't play it. So it's otherworldly to me. I look at those guys and I go, how do you do that? You know, the drums, the singing, the guitar playing. It's otherworldly to me. I identify a lot with punk rock. Because mm-hmm. it's easy to get to. Everybody can play a Misfits song after 3 hours playing a guitar for the first
couldn't
time.
Couldn't some members of the Misfits not play Misfits songs for a period of time?
You know, we just played with the Misfits.
How's that?
This past summer.
Awesome.
It was pretty cool. It was weird because Des Cadena's in the Misfits.
Oh, yeah. He's the singer of the Misfits
also,
now?
Yeah, he's a singer-guitar player.
That's Kadena from Black Flag.
And Jerry Only is the only original Misfitian in the band.
Misfidiot?
He was really nice, man. Jerry Only was very cool to me, and same with Des Kadena was really cool. I mean, Des Kadena was a singer of Black Flag before Henry.
Yeah.
And
the first 4 years.
Yeah, but there's
everything
Keith Morris.
Black.
Keith Morris in there
up.
As well.
Well, you got Keith Morris, Des Kadena.
Who was the first one?
Why is his name escaping me? There were three. There was Keith Morris, Des Kadena, and I honestly, the other guy is blanking on me.
I'm blanking
too. They're
all
really good vocalists. And for me, I do prefer that to the Rollins stuff, personally.
Yeah, a lot of people are like that. I'm I'm a Henry Rollins guy.
But that stuff has really grown on me. I had to sort of
My War Slip It In.
I actually really like Slip It In. Slip It In, I think, is really cool because it's so
fucking amazing.
Arty and metal, yeah. But also but
they're all arty
and repetitive. And Rollins, he's amazing on My War as well. I mean, My War is also
like
good.
My favorite, yeah. Top 10 favorite albums of all time.
And they're both bummers. I mean, he turned Black Flag into a bummer punk band.
He kind of did.
Like. The old Black Flag was like, it was just so so visceral that and in a way universal, the subjects. Mm-hmm. But then Rollins was just, it was just like, what are you fucking going on about, man?
Well, though, if you ever read Get in the Van, his famous tour diaries from those Black Flag years, it's all about living in Greg Ginn's parents' shed or garage, yeah, or something called The Shed.
Yeah.
And just being all aggro for,
right,
a reason that I can't really understand.
Other than the dad.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people who do, but it's just so carved out for him.
Always hated my dad.
But you know what?
I went to The Shed.
He's I think he's like 50 plus now, yeah, and he's been able to not backtrack on a lot of that stuff, but he's also
built on it.
I think he looks on that whole era and, you know, kind of going, I was just a young kid.
You give me a Jello by Afro spoken word album, give me a Henry Rollins spoken word album, honestly, I'm going to go with the Rollins at this point.
I love them both, man. But getting back to Dez Kadena.
Mm-hmm.
So we were playing this German festival this past summer with Motorhead and the Misfits. And we got off, and I knew the Misfits were going to be around, so you're kind of like looking for Jerry Only or whatever. And we're walking towards our dressing room, and there's this guy with long hair wearing green makeup. So I'm thinking, well, this is one of the guys in the Misfits. And he goes, hello. And we all kind of just go, hi. And, you know, we kind of snicker when we reach our dressing room, and we're like, did you see that guy? Like, the Misfits guy? Like, who's that guy? You know, that's not Jerry Only. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not Glenn Danzig. It was Dez Kadena.
In a weird outfit.
Full Misfits makeup. And they did a whole bunch of Misfits songs, and they also did, like, Thirsty and Miserable, like, yeah, some Flag songs and, yeah, stuff. And it was cool. They played it before us, which was, to me, weird. Because,
yeah, I mean, it would be weird. It's the Misfits.
Yeah, because it's a band that I grew up worshiping.
Yeah.
Worshiping. Like there was a time in my life that I'd get up, and I'd just go, well, there's no band that beats the Misfits. There's no band. Slayer, the Ramones, nobody comes close to this amazing, amazing band that mixes, you know, these horror images with this really pop, melodic punk rock.
But that also crosses a few different genres of punk rock. Like, the Misfits is so neat.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Hell stuff is, yep, just so, it's really, you hear it influence bands like the Dwarves and, like, mm-hmm, all, and
then Halloween. There's Halloween.
Halloween.
And Hybrid Moments, these kind of Elvis-esque, right, type, yeah, sounds.
Exactly. Angel Fuck is, mm-hmm, is like that. And
Some Kind of Love.
I heard that song Cough Cool the other day, and I didn't used to like it. And then I was like, this song's amazing.
All these songs, yeah, kind of have this lasting.
I just question mark the end of a sentence, by the way. This song's amazing. Question mark. This song's amazing.
That's not a question. That's a statement.
Exclamation.
Yeah. This song's amazing. That's a statement.
But I made it sound.
That's not like an exclamation either, dude. That it would be, this song's amazing. That's an exclamation.
This song's
amazing. And I noticed,
amazing,
just to kind of veer off here, I noticed a lot of people, you overuse exclamation marks.
Oh, yeah.
Exclamation points.
I love it. I love using
it.
I love exclamation mark followed by question mark. Followed by exclamation mark in a row.
So it'd be like, this song's amazing.
Yeah. I'm amazed. I'm questioning my judgment, but then I'm amazed again.
But anyways, getting back to Dez Kadena, and they played before us, and I was just sitting back in the dressing room getting ready to play, thinking, here's a band that I learned to play guitar with their music. Mm. Granted, there's no, you know, Danzig's not in there. And but anyways, like growing up, learning all these Misfits songs on guitar and learning how to play guitar on these songs, I remember Hollywood Babylon being one of the first songs I learned with my friend Dave Byrne in my bedroom, jamming out Hollywood Babylon. You know, before...
Yeah, as soon as I heard the Misfits,
on the cusp of puberty or whatever. And here we are, like, you know, fast forward, and they're playing for us.
Ron Reyes was the other singer in Black Flag.
All I was trying to say was, Jerry Only was cool to me. That was my... You had... Your end of your story was, and I relieved myself.
Sexually.
Yeah, sexually relieved myself. And the end of my story is... Jerry Only was cool.
And that pretty much just defines us as people, unfortunately.
Make it out to shows when I'm at home, man.
Yeah.
Like, Fucked Up played last night. JC went. He said it was a great show.
I wish I could have gone.
Yeah, with Biblical and Come On, two other Toronto
bands. And Weird
Toronto
Visions,
bands.
Which is also really good and completely different.
What's the name of the band?
Weird Visions with a Y. That's, like, drony, completely different than Biblical.
Like, shoegazer stuff?
No, it's more experimental even than that. I mean, it's a guy and some looped stuff. I guess it's shoegazer-y, but it's... You know, there's whistling looped, and it's ridiculous. And it's got a black metal influence like that sort of
so
folky
like
black metal element. Yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. But it's not racist, which is always a treat.
Okay.
Best thing about bands that are influenced by black metal, not as racist as black metal. I actually prefer music that's influenced by black metal just because I don't feel as shitty listening to it. The only black metal that I do listen to, and this is a interesting subject, is that record Philosophem by Burzum. We can't talk about it.
No, we can. I don't. I'm all about listening to anything and everything.
Yeah.
But I can't listen to Burzum. I'm not, and it's almost a political reason.
Yeah.
I just can't listen
to
that.
It's horrifying
dude.
What he's done. But the thing about Philosophem, which I didn't buy.
And I'm not usually like that, but with Burzum I reserve it.
I just downloaded it and listened to it for, you know, so I'm stealing from this guy. He's the one person I.
Dude, if there's
feel
one
no
person to download
from.
Illegally from with my consent completely, and you can definitely plug it on this podcast, it's Burzum.
So download your Burzum, folks.
Find it illegally.
Oh, and Gary Glitter. You can also download Gary Glitter at this point.
Yeah, I can. Exactly.
What else is there? You can download. Fang. You could probably download Fang, and I'm not going to be
Which
too
one?
Mad. Fang is that punk band from the 80s. They had that song called Land Shark. They had that song, The Money Will Roll Right In. The Money Will Roll Right In.
That.
Great song. And
what happened?
That guy murdered just like
Drug
dealer. Not every murderer should have their music downloaded. But the Burzum can. But Philosophem is crazy. It really sounds like the most hateful. It sounds like a hateful of everything.
This is the album?
Robot, demon, just demolishing
but
the
I
world.
But I love hateful sounding.
That's why I like
I love
it. But I don't listen to it that often. But every once in a while, if it
but
comes on.
But usually it's like, I hate my mom, and I hate my teacher, and I hate my boss kind of hate. Not
but
like,
this is
I hate
like,
certain races.
Yes, yeah, like a Viking god will erase all... All unclean,
all the dark people.
Humans. You know, it's just it's horrible, horrible. And
have you ever seen when the what's that documentary called? When the
I haven't seen that movie.
When
I read Lords of Chaos, and I didn't see When the Light Goes Out. That's the one you're talking about, right?
When the Light Goes Out is your concoction. It's called When the Light Will Take Us, or
Where the Light Will Take Us.
When will anyways?
When
anyone
will the light
listening
take
to
us?
The podcast knows what we're talking about, and if you don't, do a Google search. When the Light Will whatever. It's about. Black metal. And
happy to have our sponsors Google on board. We've got a Google toolbar on the computer here.
But they do talk to that Burzum dude, Count
Grishnak.
And he seems like he's reformed. He seems like a real kind of articulate, regular dude. But anyways, I still love a lot. I still love all the, I love Satyricon. I'm not putting Satyricon in that batch of Burzum. There are some real legitimate, really should be endorsed because they're really cool and they're cool dudes offstage. Black metal bands.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I think a lot Enslaved. Of that was more...
Enslaved or Incredible.
Well, Enslaved's a little different, but yeah.
Satyricon or Incredible. I like Dimmu Borgir a lot. These are all Norwegian bands, too. I want to steer away from metal.
Yeah, we got really into metal.
God, you know, because I just know weeks to come, there'll probably be guests that we're going to probably bring on that will... It's just going to be metal.
They're going to run circles around me.
Yeah, and it's just kind of going to be, it's going to turn into a metal discussion podcast.
Really?
That we do not want to start.
Well, we could start talking about rap. I really love that guy, Hammer.
You know what? I love hip hop, and it's not something I really talk about on record a lot. I mean, when the time is right, I just kind of mention it, but I love it. But I only love a certain period of it, and it ended, I think, with the last Tribe Called Quest album. Once that was out, I think I just kind of said goodbye.
Beats, Rhymes, and Life? That record?
That's not the last one.
I'm sorry, the Love Movement.
Yeah. Love Movement was the last one. And once they put that album out, and it has nothing to do with the band.
Yeah.
It just has to do with, I think, that kind of marked an era.
Some people would argue even that the Tribe Called Quest that was the Love Movement and Beats, Rhymes, and Life was like even a different Tribe Called Quest. Because they involved Dilla, like J Dilla as producer, and Consequences on the last record, and it was, I mean, I don't agree with you. I still listen to rap like an idiot.
Well, I was going to say there, but then every now and then there's a guy who rhymes that catches my ear and I go, wow, that's great.
Earl Sweatshirt is awesome.
See, I don't know any of this.
Yeah,
anymore.
This guy Earl Sweatshirt is like, he's a kid. He's in the Odd Future thing, but
the Odd Future. That I know. The only reason why I know about Odd Future is because of JC.
Odd Future
loves
cool.
Odd Future.
Odd Future's good. I mean, it has a backlash now.
There is.
Oh yeah,
it's like 5 minutes. Like it's just. It strikes me as something that just came like 2 minutes ago, and it's gonna last for 12 minutes.
Yeah. And that's what rap is now. The rule book is so buried in sand that people are just kind of doing what they want to do, and it's
which is kind of cool too.
This guy Danny Brown is great,
but it's hard to keep up with. It's like it's like I don't know what you call it, like techno or rave music. It's some of it's actually really cool,
right?
But it's hard to whatever. Yeah, it's
nightmare.
But it's hard
Come
to keep
on.
Up
Bass
with
nectar.
Because it's just these 12 inches that have blank sleeves. You don't know the artist. You don't know who it is. It's just some dude in his basement. And the thing about rock music, the thing about hip-hop is it gives a face and a personality to the music so you can get attached to it. You could follow it. Mm-hmm. It leaves footprints for you to follow and understand. But some of this dance music, I sound like I'm 80 years old, but I just want to follow it, and I can't.
Yeah, I've never even looked into
bothered. But there's some stuff that's good.
Sure.
That's why when it comes to electronica stuff, especially the duos like Justice and Boys Noise and Bloody Beetroots, I listen to that because they've got a face. They've got a name.
I was going to say that's the electronic stuff that always runs ahead that has really good art direction or a style to it. You
Dizzy
know?
Rascal.
Yeah.
You know, these. Although
he's still alive.
I don't know. He put out a record like a year and a half ago.
Didn't he get a sex change and become MIA at some point?
No, that's the guy from Life of Agony. The singer from Life of Agony is actually in the midst of a sex change.
Yeah. And Peter Steele's dead, but he's rolling in his grave right now like a rotisserie chicken.
All right.
Back in metal.
I don't need typo negative fans on my case.
You don't like that song, the Agnostic Front song he wrote the lyrics for? The racist one? I love that I keep bringing it back to racism.
No, what's up with this,
racism,
man?
Metal.
Well, there's
and
always
then
been
rap.
A whole carnivore or carnivore racists. That's what everybody was saying.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, back in the day, there's all this kind of weird things, and I think people were just trying to find themselves. I have friends who used to be skinheads, and you know, they kind of look down to their shoes when they gets brought up when I'm in their presence.
Right.
But man, you know, shit. You can't be held accountable when you're 15 years old and you don't even know who you are, you know. I'm forgiving of that. you know?
Yeah. Eminem, there was an attempt to discredit Eminem because there was a tape he made when he was 18, mm-hmm. 19, maybe younger, where he used the N-word.
I heard about that.
And
it's like youth that doesn't know the boundaries and the, I mean, yeah, it's forgivable. It's really, it is. Now, if you are like,
it's regrettable, it sucks, but it's,
yeah,
not.
But it's, you're also a product of your environment, yeah. And what are you gonna do? You're supposed to come out of the womb completely politically correct, knowing your boundaries? Not really, man. And if 8 Mile is any indication of where he's from, which I'm kind of guessing he's from like a trailer park, it's kind of hard to be politically correct. To shake that. You know, you try growing up in that environment and see how long you'll last when you go, guys, I don't really like how you're talking to me right now. You're going to get your ass fucking handed back to you.
Richard Pryor white guy voice. Nice. That was the Richard Pryor white guy voice.
It was.
Hey, are you on?
I
just tried to do it and didn't say anything.
No, like I got it. See, it comes with the genes, man.
It comes with the genes.
But, hey, listen, man.
I think we're done.
We're at the end of another podcast. I don't know if we were able to. Did we talk about anything?
Well, we talked about being in a band. We talked about Black Flag.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about metal. We talked about Burzum.
And I guess we did talk about stuff.
You told the story. I told the story. Things happened.
Shit happens.
We took calls.
Not really, but I put feelers out online, and it looks like we will have our first guest next week. I think I can say this prematurely.
Great.
He did agree to come down next week to my place, and we're really good friends, and a lot of people know him.
White guy?
He's white, yeah, and if something happens and it falls through, next week, it'll just be you and me, but we'll reveal who it is. I won't say who it is until next week.
So what do you think about it?
How's that for a cliffhanger?
Yeah, this is like the movie Cliffhanger.
Are we saying bye?
Yes.
Okay, so let's end it with another Brutal Night song. One of yours again.
Oh, what a nice surprise.
Yeah, let's end it with I Hate Chores.
I do hate chores.
You wrote this... the lyrics for this song, and you sing it.
I did that. I do that with all of the Brutal Night stuff.
So when you listen to this song that ends the podcast, it's Nick Flanagan singing, okay?
Deal with it.